This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Kusu Chong, Tan Chung Han, and myself, Sharad Kutin, with the top business stories of the day. It's money, money, money. Trump seeks to slash some $3.6 trillion US dollars off in government spending, and Apple's market value almost the same as China's five largest banks.
Let's start with US President Donald Trump's proposed budget for the fiscal year that begins in October. Yeah, so $3.6 trillion US dollars in cuts. And so ultimately, the aim is to have a balanced budget over the next decade. So by 2027, a long ways to go. So, you know, there have been plenty of details, you know, as to, you know, how he attempts to, you know, set the US fiscal policy on that path. But I do want to get, Chong, your comments, because you spoke to Dodge about this earlier today. And what was the market sentiment to these proposed cuts?
Well, it's dead in the water, isn't it? Because he was 6,000 miles away in an aeroplane when the budget was announced. Quite a contrast from the Prime Minister Najib when he stands in Parliament front and centre of the rostrum and delivers the budget for the year ahead. So he doesn't seem as if he even believes his budget himself, because a lot of the spending cuts are predicated on cuts from the poor. So it's like a, kind of like a reverse Robin Hood situation.
Well, you know, Chuang, when Dodge, you spoke to Dodge earlier, he did say that it's dead in the water as it stands. The question, because of the
American political...
Well, the thing is, you start high with your negotiation and then you find a compromise.
Well, you just try and get it right the first time, which is what Malaysia tries to do.
Well, you know, we have a parliamentary system where the executive is extraordinarily strong. In America, they have checks and balances. The Congress, as well as the executive, are equally strong and important.
Yeah, yet, you know, they find it really, really hard to get anything passed over there, you know, so it's basically a balance, right? Where do you find, I mean, where do you draw that line between check and balance, and having that robust, you know, two-party system, you know, versus being able to be, being able to roll out these proposals efficiently.
Yeah,
right?
I think in the American discussion about gridlock in government, I think that's an ongoing theme.
Just on the football field, but a lot of the people that voted him in, you know, the poor, the rural, the elderly, the working class, a lot of these spending cuts are basically taking stuff away from food stamps, health insurance, disability benefits, low-income housing assistance, block grants, and basically meals on wheels. So, I mean, you're penalizing the same people that voted you in.
But yeah, at the same time, he's trying to deliver on his promises. So if you remember that very infamous wall between the US and Mexico. So apparently he's going to ask for a down payment of just 1.6 billion US dollars. I mean, not a lot of money, you know, but it's, you know, the idea is to, you know, get the money in and prove so that he can kickstart, you know, at least patching up some of the walls patching up some of the holes in the wall and or the fence right now.
I mean, to be fair to Donald Trump, I mean, his message was he was going to generate growth and jobs. And I think that the question is whether this strategy is going to do that. It's going to animate American businesses and create the jobs that Americans want, right, that pay well. I think that's the key issue here.
Well, I think a big part of that is also, you know, his plans to overhaul not just corporate tax, but also income taxes, right? So that is still a wait and see, basically a wait and see thing for us. But at this point in time, we do have some details on that budget cut. So, you know, it's not just the wall, and as Chuang pointed out, perhaps some cuts to Medicaid and other social security services. But also, I mean, interestingly, he plans to sell about half of America's strategic oil reserves. And so half of them, given the kind of supply that shale is bringing onto the market, they're like, why bother hanging on to so much? The idea is to sell off half of their strategic reserves so that they can generate, I think, about half a trillion US dollars.
So America has this strategic petroleum reserve of about 690 billion barrels of oil. Mm-hmm. And these are basically in tanks, and I think in Louisiana and one other American
Texas.
State. Yeah, yeah, Texas, mm-hmm. That's right. So he wants to sell, I think, up to half of these reserves. And I think he's got to get Congress approval, because according to the laws in America, you've got to keep about 450 million barrels on tap in order to address any shortages that might occur. So he's going to sell these oil reserves. He also wants to allow drilling in Alaska. And of course, that's going to get all the greenies and tree huggers up in arms, because
anything wrong with being a tree hugger.
diametrically opposite Barack Obama's climate plan, right? So rather than save the world, Trump wants to pollute the world.
Perhaps all in the name of hitting that balanced budget by 2027.
Again, it's all about the money. Market value of the world's most profitable company, Apple, Apple Incorporated has risen above $800 billion this month.
And that's almost on par with the market cap of China's five biggest banks combined. Now, I just love talking about Apple, you know, because it just makes me wonder, you know, like perhaps in another life, I could be a part of that Apple ecosystem and enjoy some of those riches there. Oh, my word. So
maybe if in this life, a couple of years ago, you bought Apple shares, maybe that, yeah, that would be compensation enough.
Yeah, right. Or if I maybe just even bought Berkshire shares. But nevertheless, so market value of Apple, the world's most profitable company, above $800 billion this month. Now, the other the top five banks in China, let me just go through this list. And these are no small fries here. You got the ICBC, Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, China Construction Bank, Agricultural Bank of China, Bank of China, and Bank of Communications.
In fact, you can see in America, some of the biggest tech companies are approaching the $500 billion mark. You've got people like Amazon, you've got people like Facebook. In fact, Facebook way much higher than that already. You've got the Netflixes of this world, you've got the eBays of this world. They will all be $1 trillion companies in the not too distant future. Even Tesla, already worth some measures, you know, dozens of billions, and even fund managers talking that up. So.
Yeah, and Apple, you know, could become the world's first
trillion-dollar company.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be exciting.
By way of comparison, Malaysia has foreign reserves in dollar terms of about $96 billion.
Yeah.
Okay, so Apple, in its current incarnation, is more than eight times the size of Malaysia's foreign reserves.
And Apple's cash hoard, you know, they're sitting – remember yesterday, Sharad, we spoke about that booty or bounty, either
booty.
One.
Wrong word.
No, treasure. Yeah, yesterday we went to – anyways, you should have been here yesterday, Chuang. In fact, you should be here every day. So Apple's cash hoard, it's now $256.8 billion, you know, as of this month. You know, so you multiply that by Malaysia's foreign reserves, you can cover
2.5 times. They can buy our reserves. They can cover our external and internal debt.
Question for you. Now, if our company is just companies, right? So you see where the gravity is, the center of gravity is shifting. It's away from banks, say, into, say, tech stocks. Does it change the nature of the economy in terms of its dynamics? Are banks no different in some sense from tech companies? Not in terms of what they do, but it just, if they have that kind of heft, they just have that heft.
No, I mean, look at it, right? Amazon is the world's biggest e-tailing company, but they've got no stock. I mean, they're just basically intermediaries. You look at Alibaba and the platform, they have no stock on their shelves. You know, as opposed to, like, say, Barnes & Noble, for example. You talk about Uber. Uber is the biggest, you know, ride-hailing company in the world. They have no cars in the bank. They don't own any cars or vehicles, right? So it's an asset-like scenario we have now.
But also, you know, drawing those differences, you know, we've got banks which basically facilitate a lot of the economic activity, right, via their lendings and borrowing. So they're not limited to just one sector, to just one product. Whereas Apple, obviously, very much in the tech space, right? So, you know, in that sense, banks obviously, you know, have a lot more influence or, you know, I mean, it's certainly a proxy to the domestic economies and the global economy as well.
Okay. Speaking again about money, $100 worth of Bitcoin in 2010 is now worth, get this, guys, $73 million. Right. Go from $100 to $73 million. I can't even. What is that multiple of?
I have no idea. You do the math. Now, just a few moments ago, you asked me to buy. Now, I should have. Well, you said I should have bought Apple shares 2 years ago. Nuh-uh, buddy. I should have bought Bitcoin back in 2010. Man, I'd be retired. I wouldn't be here with you guys. I mean, maybe I will, but I wouldn't work for Manila. I mean, because $100 in Bitcoin in 2010. Now worth $73 million. Now, to make it a little bit more bite-sized, if let's say you bought just $5 in Bitcoin back in 2010, you'd be sitting on a cool $4.4 million. Where were we 7 years ago, Chuang? Where were we?
And the question really is why?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's basically the rise of the parallel currencies, isn't it? Because of the whole fatigue with fiat and paper money and basically the debasement of the US dollar. So you've got, you know, Ethereum and other cryptocurrencies really coming up.
Yeah, and so you've got Bitcoin basically hitting that historic high of about $2,000 over the weekend. But, you know, just because of its meteoric rise, it does not mean that it is not without risk. You know, it is certainly very volatile because overnight, you got Bitcoin falling by $200 in just 4 hours. So, you know, if let's say you use that $2,000 benchmark, it fell basically 10%. in 4 hours. Then it came back around, you know, and hit another fresh record. So it's still very volatile, you know, still a lot of questions and criticisms. But nevertheless, you know, Sharad, as you alluded to, it is gaining more confidence. You've even got the likes of the CEO of Fidelity Investments, Abigail Johnson. Fidelity is basically a huge investment fund manager. And they are saying that, hey, you know, they are showing a vote of confidence in Bitcoin. So perhaps gaining more support there.
Okay, we'll be back with more business news after this, a BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.